You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Professor Patrick Bond, who is a professor of political economy at Fitz University School of Governance, joins us on the line. Good afternoon to you, Patrick. Nice to talk to you.
Freddie, it's so nice to be back with you, and greetings to the listeners.
Indeed. Well, CEOs are entrepreneurial, they're enterprising, they're innovative. That's why they get to where they get, and they bring some unique skills to the business. So why can't they make 500 times more than the worker?
That's right. That's the line of argument. It's called a meritocracy, and capitalism is meant to value labor according to its input and reward it appropriately. And if it's a little too high, then the market will adjust it. That's the line of argument you'd hear from my colleagues at Wits Business School, perhaps. What we're failing to do in South Africa is recognize the extent to which criminality is involved. And in a sense, you could argue, because these men, and they're all men, get away with the world's highest rate of economic crime. This is not my invention. This is a regular report from PricewaterhouseCoopers that South Africa's corporate elites are the world leaders in money laundering, bribery, corruption, procurement fraud, asset misappropriation, and cybercrime. I suppose you could say, since they're the world's best, well, the meritocracy is they deserve the greatest salaries. In fact, we are about this rated seventh in the world in salaries. But, I mean, you know, the other countries where the CEOs are paid higher are all very rich countries. I could go through the list if you want. But it's one of those extraordinary moments where we're really unveiling how this meritocracy argument falls apart. It's systematic criminality. The French are number two in corruption. The Kenyans number three, according to Pricewaterhouse. And South Africa has held that rate regularly. In fact, the International Monetary Fund shows that South Africa's corporate profits are about third highest in the world. And when you look at some of the characters involved in this, I mean, we're talking about people who earned a huge chunk of this wealth during the apartheid era. They were beneficiaries of the crime against humanity, or in the post-apartheid era through unethical practices. For example, in the top dozen, we have Atul Gupta and the wealth list, the Forbes Sunday Times wealth list. And we have people who are under investigation, some under have been convicted for Competition Commission offenses and illicit financial flows and all manner of other activities. It is quite a mobster crew, the guys in suits and Sandton. And to be frank, you can tell them, if you're wandering around a Sandton, you can tell them by the color of their skin. We're talking about nearly all of them being white. So this is a very important time when the phrase white monopoly capital is bandied about. It's used, it's badly abused, it's ridiculed by white business. But now it's time to, as Carol Patton herself put it earlier this month, to really look in the mirror and ask, is white monopoly capital one of the country's great social problems, along with the other corporate corruption problem, the Zuptas?
It's very interesting, because I was just going to look at the salaries and the working conditions of workers, but that correlation to rates of economic crime, where the main drivers for the high or increased reported rates of economic crime in Africa were South Africa. I mean, 69% we account for that. And looking at how some regions reported lower rates of economic crime, and the global trend was steady, and yet here we are on the up. And you're saying it's all part of the same picture, Patrick?
Oh, I would say so. And part of what this phenomenon represents is a deregulatory attitude, ironically, by the ANC government. I mean, it was, as you put it in the intro, 30 years ago, only a 50-to-1 ratio between the chief executive officer's pay and the average workers in these large top 100 JSE-listed firms. And now it's 500. So what's happened? I would argue that the transition to democracy was liberation, to be sure. We're so delighted there's no formal racist laws on the books, and there's one person, one vote in a unitary state. This was the objective of Nelson Mandela. But to get there, as his former intelligence minister, Ronnie Castrels, put it, there were Faustian pacts, deals with the devils. And that allowed these men, these white men, to really pick up the vast bulk of the surplus. So last October, the World Bank issued a a big report on world inequality. And if you look at it, just quite stunning that only one country has in any way equivalent in terms of the 1%, our top elites, the 1%, how much income they've picked up. And that was the United States, with Wall Street out of control. And the difference in 1994 was that that top 1% was taking home just 9.5% of the national income. It went up to 20% by the peak year 2008. No doubt it's going to be reviewed, and possibly these new statistics would suggest even higher. So yes, I think this is a real wake-up call to say it's time to revisit some of the deals, the deregulatory relationships, the exchange control relaxation, the failure to prosecute for illicit financial flows, the slap on the wrist kinds of penalties. We keep hearing about companies that were in extreme, you know, violations. You know, we had ANC Chancellor House in a deal with Hitachi to for the biggest single chunk of it, the biggest contract ever in the country. That was Medupi's boilers. And yet Hitachi, which was fined $20 million in the United States for that corruption, is running around doing all sorts of contracts today. There just seems to be a culture of impunity, a lack of accountability. And I really would put it at the African National Congress's terrible weakness when it comes to grappling with corporate power. And I happened to work in President Mandela's office. I saw that firsthand when we were writing the very first white paper for the country, the Reconstruction and Development Program. We were told very explicitly by Mandela's managers, including his then deputy president, Thabo Mbeki, listen, you've got to take this to corporate South Africa before we take it to the cabinet or the parliament or the people. And it was three guys. I could name them if you'd like, but that was the sort of power that you could feel in which corporates really ran a show that benefited them. And this is one of the symptoms of it, these CEO pay rates.
Wow. But Patrick, talk to me about why that is bad for the economy. I have a whole list of reasons why low wages are very bad for the economy. Why is it bad? I mean, and I'm appealing to those people who want to be pragmatic about supply and demand, and if you are in that industry, the company performs well, it's justified, and so on. Appealing to the not just the sense of justice and righteousness, because those are ideals that some people scoff at, but at a very pragmatic and practical level, is it good for the economy to have people earning 500 times more than their workers?
Not at all. And let's just again confirm, you could make the argument that they deserve the pay because the profits taken home by these companies are amongst the highest in the world. The IMF report from last July put it about third in the world. Denmark, Indonesia were a bit higher that year. So they are definitely performing. The JSE is over 55,000. That's one of the, it's probably the very highest ratio of the listing value to the underlying value, the so-called Warren Buffett Index in the world. So yeah, you could say that's an impressive outcome that suggests they deserve high pay. But it's financial froth. And so much of what corporate CEO pay is about are bonuses to push up share price artificially. And that's how they often are allowed to get these incredible high incomes, because they're cashing out on their share bonuses that come from that sort of reward structure inside the company. And this is, by the way, quarter by quarter reward, so there's no long-term incentive. But I would say that it's terrible economically because it makes the workers very angry. And don't take it from me, Reddy, the World Economic Forum every year has a global competitiveness index, and they rate 140 countries. And since 2012, since the year of Maracana, our workers have been the angriest workers in the world of those 140 countries, year after year. It's quite extraordinary. It's a measure that they call labor-employer relations. Are they collaborative or confrontational? And we do have, let's call it the gold medal in the world class struggle, just like we have, in a sense, the gold medal in the world corruption games from South Africa. Quite extraordinary. That doesn't make the economy work very well. Another reason is those workers are angry because their pay hasn't kept up. We've had casualization affecting so many of these industries. That's where that profit increase comes from, in part. And of course, that means that the worker pay doesn't give them enough to buy enough goods. They're on debt. The credit overhang, especially after 2008, has been incredibly high. The National Credit Reporter puts the impaired credit, as they call it, the people who can't pay 3 months of their outstanding debt payments, at nearly half of the 22 million South African borrowers. So the borrowers who are workers aren't being paid enough, and that pushes us towards more bankruptcies and keeps the economy really flat. We don't have a strong consumer class as well. I also think they're getting, so I've made three arguments to you. A, it's a corrupted system of an economy that's financialized, mm-hmm. where the incentive is for short-termism. And as a result as well, there's a lot of incentive to take money out of the country, and that happens extreme ways, illicit financial flows that people are very concerned about, tax dodging and so forth. So the shareholders like it. They give the CEOs high rates of return, but it's bad for the economy. Second, it makes the economy extremely unequal and workers are angry. I should have mentioned our inequality rate just on income alone is 0.77, measured 0 to 1 on what we call the Gini coefficient index, the highest ever recorded, 0.77. So these are the kinds of indicators, the world's angriest workers, most corrupt companies, that I think if you're a smart company manager, you're going to scratch your head and say, maybe we're breeding the cause of what will be a socialist revolution, because this is the sort of out-of-control, extreme wealth versus poverty and angry workers to show for it that may make this a rather unsustainable economic situation.
Patrick, always a pleasure chatting to you. Thank you so much.
Good to talk to you.
Really. Bye-bye, dear. Bye-bye. And Professor of Political Economy, Wits University School of Governance. Yeah, the line was bad, but we become adults about this thing. You know, just, it's uncomfortable, but we can hear what he's saying. Trust me, if he was inaudible, I would have dropped the line, but we could hear what he was saying. He's overseas. He was kind enough to speak to us. It's a Skype line that wasn't perfect, but the content is far more important. Have a drink if it really spoiled your day.